Coming up on Fronteras, lawmakers could change or repeal the Texas Dream Act this legislative session. The act allows some undocumented students to pay in-state tuition at Texas colleges.
There's around like two options for me. Either I work a lot more to try to earn up enough money and more earn more scholarships to sort of pay off for the extra cost that I would have to pay, or I take a couple time off from college to sort of earn some money.
We look at the legislative battle ahead over the state's Dream Act. People in Mexico are tired of government corruption, violence, and of not feeling safe. Mexicans are protesting in ways they haven't before. Some journalists there are also feeling a bit bolder.
The reporters that I spoke to in Chihuahua said that, you know, we wouldn't have touched a story like that before, but now we know that the people are with us.
What's driving this media shift in Mexico, and how long will it last? First, the news. This is Fronteras, the journalism project bringing you stories about the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and changing demographics along the Southwest. Fronteras is a collaboration of several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Here on Fronteras, we've been looking at how media coverage is changing in Mexico after 43 students were killed there. MARFA Public Radio's Fronteras reporter Lorne Madelon brought us the story last week. One person he spoke to was a reporter named Juan Torre. Torre said investigative journalism and the pursuit of the truth won't succeed in Mexico without engaged citizens.
So it's 50-50. We're going to put 50% to be where the news is, to be where something's wrong, where something's good too. We got to be there. But the people has to participate too. The people has to participate. And then we make the government change to the good for Mexico.
Fronteras' Lorne Madelon joins us today to tell us more about what he learned from the broadcasters in Mexico. Lorne, where exactly did you go?
I went to both Ojinaga, Chihuahua, Mexico, and Camargo, Chihuahua, Mexico, two towns in the state of Chihuahua, both on or near the border, both with a long history of broadcasting across vast swaths of the very big state of Chihuahua, Mexico. I had opportunity to speak to two reporters. I went down there not exactly sure of what I would find. That's very common on many news stories. But in this case, I was rewarded by following a hunch that, like the rest of Mexican society at large, there might be a certain boldness. It's more anecdotal. It's certainly not scientific. It's not quantifiable. But a certain boldness being felt by journalists, much the same way individual private citizens who have not been engaged in the political process are now feeling in the wake of the murders of the students in Iguala, in Guerrero, in southern Mexico.
And just quickly remind us about that for listeners who didn't hear about it. Police and government officials were alleged to be involved in that, right?
Depending on whom you talk to, this is either a watershed moment for Mexico, or it is something that, for some reasons that are unclear, has galvanized Mexico. Let's go back to the 26th of September, 2014, just a few months ago. Some students were on their way to the town of Iguala in Guerrero State. The official government version is that a local elected mayor, his wife, in collusion with corrupt municipal police under their command, in collusion with paid assassins working for a drug gang known as Guerreros Unidos, intercepted the students on their way purportedly to interrupt a public speech by the politically ambitious wife of this mayor. That's the official government version, according to the Mexican Attorney General. What we do know is that six people were shot at, three died, and then witnesses saw 43 students being taken off a bus, and the allegation is that they were then murdered and burned for many hours until their ashes were thrown into a river near Iguala. The government took a long time to even acknowledge what had happened. It then said, it's not our fault. This is the federal government. It's not our fault. This happened locally. And then it turned out that witnesses were saying that the army knew what was going on and didn't do anything. And just at the end of December, the very deservedly respected magazine called Proceso in Mexico City, an investigative magazine, published a report that claimed that federal police were waiting for these students well before they allegedly tried to interrupt the public speech of the mayor's wife in Iguala. What this has done is galvanized otherwise disparate portions of Mexican society to speak for the first time, perhaps as strongly as they're speaking since the Mexican Revolution, saying, you know, basta, it's enough. We don't like the political organized crime nexus that's plagued Mexico for so long, and we're tired of it. And the reason that that particular expression, I am tired, is because in the middle of the consternation following the revelation that these students had been quote-unquote disappeared, that uniquely Latin American term, they had been disappeared, at the end of an hour-long news conference in Mexico City, the current Mexican Attorney General, Jesus Murillo Caram, said, "Ya me cansé, I'm tired." And what he was saying is, it's like, you know, look, I'm getting tired. We've had a lot of questions. Well, that immediately went viral on social media, as in, we are tired of a government that just cannot protect us. We are tired of a government that's in collusion with organized crime.
So people are tired. What has changed with the media, and what did the reporters tell you? How is this impacting them?
I want to stress that anything I'm talking about in terms of the effect that journalists are feeling, the power that they're harnessing of the energy of the populace, has to be seen through the prism of a reality where you're in a country where the truth is often opaque, where the Committee to Protect Journalists claims that upwards of 90 people involved in journalism have been murdered since 2006. And so what I saw, although encouraging, must be seen as a snapshot and not as a monolithic, one-size-fits-all explanation of what's taking place in the Mexican media. The Mexican media, like the people itself, feel a sense of betrayal, and it's catalyzed a severe response to the government, what's perceived to be, I think justifiably, is a very poor response, a very slow response by the Mexican federal authorities to this case. And the people that I met are doing investigations, for example, about allegations. There's been a formal complaint lodged against the current governor of the state of Chihuahua. His name is Cesar Duarte, to the extent that he is now, for the first time publicly, denying answers from reporters that he is not somehow using illicit money to control a bank, that he is not using illicit money to own a luxurious hotel in Parral. That's where Pancho Villa, the famous revolutionary, is buried in Chihuahua State. And the reporters that I spoke to in Chihuahua said that, you know, we wouldn't have touched a story like that before, but now we know that the people are with us, and we are in a minority. Most of them are, that is, journalists are either co-opted into silence, or they're told, take an offer we can't refuse, plato plomo, you know, we're going to give you some money, and if you don't accept that, you're going to get our bullets. And there's so many examples of that, that people are still moving very tentatively in a post-Iguala Mexico, but what one person said, a slight opening, is being felt, is being noticed, but I stress anecdotally, Crystal, in certain parts of border Mexico where the history of radio in particular is very strong.
In the story that we heard last week on Fronteras, you mentioned they played, it was a promo of some kind?
It was a public service announcement, and it had been paid for to be put into rotation by the state government, saying in Spanish, citizens, if you are asked for un solo centavo, a single cent, by the authorities as you drive on the carreteras, the highways of this state, of Chihuahua, call this number and denounce it.
Si sufres algún abuso por parte de la autoridad, denuncia al 9. Recuerda que ninguna autoridad está facultada para cobrarte un solo centavo.
It had been paid for and was supposed to be in heavy rotation, but state police apparently, according to the reporters I spoke to, had found out about that and said, don't play it. And it had been barely been played, notwithstanding that the government paid for that inventory, for that exposure. And in the wake of Iguala, it's being played every single day, according to these reporters. And they said that's something that wouldn't have happened before.
That's fascinating.
Now we should point out that as a practical matter, nobody is going to call the police to denounce other police for fear of retribution in Mexico. That hasn't changed.
So reporters, at least the ones you spoke to, getting bolder. Do you think this will stick? Do you think that this post-Iguala change is going to last?
You know, it's tough not to be cynical. When you discuss Mexico, it's such a wonderful country. It has such a vibrant culture. I'm not Latin. I'm not Mexican. But I've never been more profoundly touched than I have by my extensive travels and reporting in Mexico, and had the privilege to live there for a short time. My thought, speaking to Mexicans, is that the answer to your question directly would be, we hope so. But we need some time to pass. We need some time to pass to see. We really don't know, because I don't think the government at different levels, state and federal, know itself how they're going to deal with this new boldness on the part of society. We don't really understand, and analysts are split about the reasons for why this particular incident of bloodshed in Iguala, the murder of the college students, has galvanized Mexican society when so many other very similar incidents bearing the same marks of a sort of a narco-political connection, if you will, the organized crime political nexus in Mexico, has been ignored. In June, the army is accused of killing 22 people, 21 of whom were definitely unarmed. The Associated Press in Mexico City has just published, Mark Stevenson is the reporter, has published a report with one of the witnesses to that alleged massacre. There was very muted protests following that because the Mexican army, notwithstanding all the human rights abuses that have been lodged against it since the quote-unquote drug war was started in 2006 by Felipe Calderón, has remained one of those institutions, along with the church, along with family, that's revered in Mexican society. There was no real protest to speak of. Then came Iguala, and now the protests started to mount some more. And then in the midst of the disgust and disdain that Mexicans feel about the murder of the college students came revelations that the president of Mexico's wife and his treasury secretary had bought homes built and financed by a favored government contractor in a neighborhood of Mexico City. The outrage over that sort of coalesced with the army massacre, coalesced, if you will, with Iguala, to the point that now there's a certain critical mass that seems to not be fading. And so to that extent, reporters are hopeful they'll be able to live in a climate and an environment where they're able to do their job that much more efficiently, because there are reporters, I promise you that. There are honest police officers in Mexico, and there are genuinely dedicated reporters who can't be bought off and who won't be bought off, and I admire their courage immensely.
Lorne Madelon, Fronteras reporter at Marfa Public Radio. Thank you, Lorne.
Pleasure to be with you, Crystal.
Texas's new lieutenant governor has vowed to repeal the Texas DREAM Act during the legislative session, which recently kicked off in Austin. The DREAM Act allows some undocumented students to pay in-state tuition at Texas colleges and universities. Let's take a look at the battle ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for choosing Starbucks. Marley, what can I get started?
I met up with University of Texas at San Antonio freshman Alfredo Avila at Starbucks. Alfredo is studying electrical engineering.
And mostly I'm going to try to do a lot of computer engineering and sort of do a lot of software design, things like that. And that's pretty much what I'm studying right now, and I really like it, so hopefully in the future I can go into that.
He was born in Michoacán, Mexico, but the United States is all he's ever known. Alfredo's parents brought him to this country illegally when he was just 2 years old across the Texas-Mexico border.
From there, we went to New York, and we lived in Manhattan for a little bit, and then we moved to New Jersey, and in New Jersey was where I spent most of my life growing up. From there, I moved to San Antonio, Texas, where I've been here since I was about 13 years old.
Alfredo graduated from San Antonio's Earl Warren High School, and because of the Texas DREAM Act signed in 2001, he's paying in-state tuition at UTSA. Out-of-state tuition would have cost him an additional $6,000 per semester for tuition and fees. That doesn't include other factors such as books and transportation. Alfredo works part-time and lives at home to save money. I asked him how a repeal of the act would affect him.
There's around like two options for me. Either I work a lot more to try to earn up enough money and more earn more scholarships to sort of pay off for the extra cost that I would have to pay, or I take a couple of time off from college to sort of earn some money. So it just becomes a lot more difficult to attend college, which has been a dream of mine.
Alfredo is the first person in his family to attend a university. Outgoing Democratic State Senator Leticia Vandepute authored House Bill 1403, the DREAM Act, and says it's been working for Texas.
What this does is make sure that our students who graduate from Texas schools, who have been here at least 3 years, have the ability to pay the same in college tuition as the students that they graduated with.
To be eligible, students also have to sign an affidavit stating they are seeking legal residency. Some Republicans, including newly elected Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, argue laws like this encourage illegal immigration. They say it's unfair to students who are U.S. citizens from other states who have to pay the higher out-of-state tuition. Here's Patrick last week.
I will totally support senators who want to end in-state tuition.
Supporters say parents of these students have been paying taxes in Texas, and the state has already invested in their grade school education. According to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board's latest figures, in 2013, more than 20,000 students benefited from the Texas DREAM Act. More than 1,300 were enrolled in San Antonio schools. The majority of these students attend community college. Not all are undocumented. Some have federal government visas. Some are also protected from deportation through President Obama's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. That includes Alfredo, the student we met earlier.
I've grown up with the customs, with sort of the identity, this more or less like the values and the morals and more of the beliefs that the American culture sort of brings on the people that grow up inside of America.
The Texas Association of Business said in an email it supports in-state tuition for some undocumented students. Dallas business owner George Baldor is a Cuban refugee who came to the States at age 6. He's launched an effort and a website, keephb1403.com.
Texas has to be competitive, not just, you know, nationally, but internationally. We're in the world economy, and having an educated workforce is something that is vital for Texas's growth. You know, business owners that I'm talking to are frustrated about the level of education in general. So, you know, 1403 to me is an obvious answer.
There have been previous attempts to repeal the Texas Dream Act, but they failed. The political climate is different now. Governor Rick Perry, who signed the law, is leaving, and the makeup of the Texas legislature is more conservative this session. Alfredo says he's concerned about what lawmakers will do, but all he can focus on right now is the new semester.
I try to focus all my time on, or the time that I get on school, and then the rest I work to sort of try to keep up with some of the bills that we have to pay and things like that.
When he gets his engineering degree, he wants to join the workforce. Some Republican lawmakers say the Texas Dream Act is another way for the state to be involved in the act of picking winners and losers, and they want the law to change or go away. They've already filed bills either to change or repeal the act. Coming up on Fronteras, how art is helping immigrants and refugees capture their stories.
Home is where my stories are.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A new report says drones used to patrol the border are simply not worth the money. The man behind the report took to C-SPAN's Washington Journal this week to explain. Marfa Public Radio's Travis Bubenik has more.
We're not saying it's garbage. And
John Roth, the Inspector General for Homeland Security, spoke at length about how the report found the 8-year-old border drone program to be costly and essentially a waste of taxpayer dollars. His office says the program hasn't lived up to its promises, but also that those promises, the reasons Customs and Border Protection wanted the drones and what they hope to accomplish with them, were never that clear in the first place.
Ultimately, what we try to do is to prod CBP into understanding what it is that they're trying to do and put forth measures that can actually see whether or not they are successful in apprehensions. Thus far, they haven't done it, and that was really the focus of our audit.
But CBP has rejected those findings, saying the Inspector General's report used flawed methods to come up with cost estimates and that border drones have indeed fought organized crime, drug trafficking, and helped other law enforcement agencies with national intelligence operations. Still, within this conflict, there are signs that there's some common ground.
One of the recommendations that we made, and to me, one of the most important recommendations, is sit back and figure out what it is that you want to accomplish with this program and set those forth in a very public way, and they've agreed to do that.
CBP says it agrees in principle, at least, that it could be more transparent about the program and about how it tracks expenses, but it maintains it's already meeting the reporting standards it's required to, and in a rebuttal, the agency, quote, respectfully requests closure of this recommendation. Roth's report alone likely won't mean the drones will stop flying anytime soon. His recommendations don't explicitly say the idea of drones patrolling the border is a bad one, but just that it hasn't been done that efficiently.
If Southwest Airlines buys an airplane, you can be sure that it's going to be used as much as it possibly can to get the best return on the investment.
In West Texas, I'm Travis Bubenik.
Houston receives more refugees than any other city in America, but many of them struggle to find a sense of belonging after relocating. Saida Hassan reports from Houston on what home means to immigrant and refugee communities.
She spent her life staring out the kitchen window, so she decorated it with the items that reminded her of her importance.
Zainab Mabazari is a little nervous as she presents her artwork to her family. She loves to write, but this is her first time pairing it with photography. In this series, Mabazari took pictures around her childhood home, capturing its transformation since her parents immigrated from Algeria over 20 years ago. Seeing the photos was an emotional experience for her mother, Nadia.
It was like I wanted to cry.
Mabazari is part of Moving Words, a refugee and immigrant narrative project. The Houston-based group uses art to explore the idea of what home means. Participants recently showcased their work at the Baker Ripley Neighborhood Center in Southwest Houston. Dozens of photos, poems, and essays lined the walls as visitors conversed in a range of international tongues. As a first-generation American, Mabazari says the project helped her understand her parents' immigrant experience.
It's something that I've never really noticed before, because my mother tries to keep those things hidden from us, her struggles, her sacrifices. And when I told her about this project and she started opening to me about these stories, it's eye-opening.
Moving Words was launched by college students Jonathan Goh and Michelle Kiang. Goh says they were inspired by their own heritage. His father is from Singapore, and his mother is a refugee from Cambodia. Goh says he and Kiang wanted to establish a creative outlet for people of immigrant backgrounds.
So just providing avenues for people to kind of go back and have intergenerational dialogue with their parents or even with siblings or with friends in their community and really just reflect more on how they grew up.
Kiang moved to Houston from Venezuela when she was 8 years old. She says getting together with immigrants from all over the world led to some powerful discussions.
A lot of people came to me saying, I've never had an opportunity to talk about this or think about this, and you've opened up this entire world. And another person said that hearing other people's experiences validates their own, so it makes their own feelings feel more real.
Kiang says many of the participants are people she knows, friends, classmates, and other acquaintances. But she says she wants to reach out to more immigrants and refugees and give them a chance to share their narratives.
We hope to communicate that everyone's immigration story or refugee story is completely different, but there's still common threads in between, and that people can define home in a lot of different ways, and that they're all valid.
So what have participants like Mabazari taken away from the project?
Home is where my stories are. So whether it means being here in America, whether it means being in Algeria, it's combining all the stories I've ever heard and really just finding my home in them.
She says the Moving Word stories have made her idea of home even richer. Saida Hassan, News 88.7.
Fronteras is a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and changing demographics. The show's at tpr.org. Charanga Cakewalk composed this music. I'm Crystal Chavez in San Antonio.